Welcome to a podcast brought to you by the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. Our academy is a national organization committed to excellence in orthopedic manual physical therapy practice, education, and research. And we're here to explore a wide range of topics with you through interviews with content experts.
Hello, my name is Stephen Schaefer. And I'm excited to bring to you a spectacular interview with Dr. Jennifer Dice. Dr. Dice is a clinical specialist who works at Texas Children's Hospital in Sugar Land, which is located just outside of Houston. She is a board-certified pediatric specialist and also holds a manual therapy certification through the International Academy of Orthopedic Medicine, U.S. In addition to these accomplishments, Dr. Dice is also a member of our academy. The article we're going to discuss today is titled, Manual Therapy in Pre-Adolescent Children, a Delphi Investigation of Physical Therapists in the United States. You can find this article in Volume 101, Issue 4 of Physical Therapy, which was published in April of 2021. And, as always, we'll link to the article in the show notes. With that as our introduction to today's conversation, let's get to the interview. Dr. Dice, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. We are super excited to have you here today as a guest. And I know that our audience is going to gain some valuable insight from what you have to share with us today. Speaking of which, let's just dive right in and we'll start by asking, can you tell our audience how this research project came into existence?
Sure. Up until the point that I started my doctoral program and journey at Texas Tech, I had been a peds physical therapist for 20 plus years, or about 20 years. Up until that time, I'd been going to peds specific continuing education, and a lot of those courses focused on neuro and developmental based interventions and facilitation. Also, around the time that I started my doctoral program, the hospital I work at, Texas Children's, was starting an adolescent sports medicine program. I really looked at this as an opportunity to enhance my orthopedic manual skills and techniques, specifically joint mobilizations. When I joined the program, initially I wanted to do the education track. I've always loved teaching hands-on in the clinic, mentoring other clinicians. And as I was going through the program, I would get the research updates from Dr. Sizer, Dr. Brismay. And that just really intrigued me. So then I actually pushed myself even further out of my comfort zone and decided to jump into research. This specific project, looking at manual therapy in pediatrics, really kind of came out of relearning or improving on my manual skills through the doctoral program and kind of marrying the skills that I'd learned in pediatrics. A lot of the techniques and facilitation that we did in a lot of those continuing ed courses really didn't look at joint-specific treatment. But I started to think, all right, I've got some kids that sit in wheelchairs all day long. Why haven't we addressed these techniques like hip mobilizations, knee ankle mobilizations into treating these children in addition to our facilitation techniques and postural control? So I really wanted to look at that piece.
That's a really great point. And I too have had the experiences where manual therapy can carry across many different areas. For example, in my history, I've used my orthopedic manual therapy skills in inpatient settings. And it seems to be a deviation from what's considered the typical care there. But I find it often works very well. And I also really love how you described that in terms of pediatrics, patient populations can have lots of different types of problems. The three things you listed were neurological, orthopedic, and sports medicine related areas. And that begs the question, as it pertains to a study like this one, what are some of the reasons that pre-adolescent children can experience pain?
Great question. And I can really talk about, based on my experience, that it's general musculoskeletal pain. Kids that have joint laxity or hyperflexibility, I feel like they don't have the neuromuscular control to maintain the integrity of those joints. And sometimes we need to work on that strengthening to help joint stiffness. If they're coming out of a cast because they broke something, they're going to have pain. Muscular imbalances, kind of going back to that joint laxity, but also, you know, some of our kids that do have spasticity, their muscular imbalances can lead to poor neuromuscular control and motor control, which then in and of itself will lead into maladaptive movement patterns. And if you're moving the way that the joint's not necessarily expected to move, then it's going to cause, you know, a cascade of effects, whether up or down the chain. At least that's what I've kind of seen. So I feel that our pre-adolescent children are very much like our adult counterparts. They can have pain and experience pain much in the same ways and reasons that our adult patients do.
That's such a great point, and that's exactly how I see it as well. Yes, I interact with children differently, and I might, let's say, play more or have a different verbal communication style, but I often see the same types of pathologies and pain patterns, and I apply a lot of my adult knowledge and skills to the pediatric setting, and it tends to work out very well. And one quick story that I have that just popped into my head, I saw this child, this is maybe 5 years ago, and he kept falling over. He couldn't perform in gym, he had trouble squatting, and he'd fall to the ground randomly. And they had spent all this time searching for the neurological source, the developmental problem as it maybe could have been. And everyone found nothing. And eventually they just sent him to physio. And when I watched him move, it just looked like his ankles were tight. So I put him on a little ramp so that he was pre-positioned into plantar flexion because he couldn't dorsiflex well. And then he could squat all the way down, hold it, and not fall over. And his mother went crazy because it was the first time that somebody, I guess, found this little tidbit that identified that maybe her son didn't have a developmental problem, you know, something maybe is present that's easily fixable. And all it took was someone to stop and think, well, maybe a child can have a tight talocrural joint just like an adult can have a tight talocrural joint. And, you know, all we did was mobilize his joints, and within maybe 3 sessions, he was normal again.
That's awesome.
Moving on from that point, can you tell us, what does the available evidence currently state about this type of pre-adolescent population and the utilization of manual therapy with them?
Well, there's been a great deal of literature out there regarding the use of manual therapy, specifically mobilizations, joint mobs, among adults. But in the pediatric realm, there really has not been much done by physical therapists. There are systematic reviews looking at the use of mobilizations and manipulations with chiropractors, but it's really lacking on the aspect of physical therapists utilizing these techniques. And the systematic reviews that have been done, their overall consensus is that there's a low number of studies that have been done. I believe Vaughn et al. Did one that had out of 56 studies, 4 that they actually looked at, and the quality of the studies were felt to be pretty poor and inconclusive to refute or support the use of manual therapy.
So is that the primary reason that you decided to conduct a Delphi investigation?
Partly, yes. It's twofold. I was going out to all these continuing ed courses, and for 20 years, I had been treating my kids based on these ideals and principles. And then I had these new ideas and principles come in. And yeah, when I found that there was no literature on it, I said, okay, well, what do I do about this? Initially, I wanted to do a random control trial as my research project, but without any evidence out there to support the use of one. Talking with my advisors and mentors at Tech, we decided, well, let's see how therapists are actually utilizing some of these techniques. You know, what techniques do they feel are helpful in this population, and what conditions would they use them with?
And for the sake of our audience, in particular those audience members that might not know what a Delphi investigation is, can you describe the basic premise and what it's used to determine?
Sure. Basically, a Delphi investigation is a series of surveys answered by, and I'm using air quotes, experts, in efforts to build a consensus around a given subject. It's typically done for those subjects that don't have a lot of evidence or support in the literature. Because you want to find out, you know, people that treat this population, how do they do it? So typically our first round is gathering information. So we're seeking out, what are you using? How are you using it? What are you using it on? So it's very open-ended questions, kind of similar to like a brainstorming session. Then from that round, we take in all this data that we've gotten from the respondents, and we try to find common themes. And among those themes, we then send the information that we've gathered in a more concise manner out for round two, and we let them vote using a Likert scale. Like, yes, I would use that technique. No, I would not use this technique. Yes, I believe this condition's appropriate. So that's how we do round two. So they get to respond and basically tell us what their opinion is on the overall information that we gathered from round one. And then in round three for our study, what we did is we basically took round two. We got all the data from round two, who answered question A and how did they answer it. We got percentages for each of the Likert scores, and we presented that back in round three to allow them to, again, vote and give their opinion. Yes, I still think I would pick A over B, or I definitely would do A, but I wouldn't do C. So from then, they voted their opinion again on round three, and we then took the data from round three, and that's kind of, we only did three rounds in this Delphi. Another Delphi might do more than one round or try to keep going until they get consensus. I wanted to be able to complete my dissertation of my project, so I did kind of limit it to the three rounds. So we gathered our data, and that was that.
That was a great explanation. And as we all know, there is, of course, a continuum between research and clinical practice. And to me, the Delphi study sounds like a nice way for researchers to begin bridging that gap so that we can have our clinical research be informed by clinical practice.
Yes, I believe so as well. I think in this instance in particular, what impairments they utilized certain techniques for was very valuable and eye-opening for me.
And speaking of those physical therapists, who in particular were the participants in the study and how many of them were involved?
Sure. So in this particular project, I wanted to look and see how therapists that were experts in manual therapy and therapists that were experts in pediatrics and neurodevelopmental treatment, NDT, what their thoughts were. So getting that brainstorming between the three different groups, how they really felt these techniques could be used among children. I felt that that was kind of important to kind of look at all of those components. So for this study in particular, I looked at therapists that were credentialed with their fellowship, their FAA OMPT, board certification in pediatrics, their PCS, and their certification in NDT. It was honestly the way that I could identify people by searching through the internet and find people of those credentials so that I could then include them in my study. That was honestly the easiest way for me to find those people that I wanted to help answer. That's certainly not to take away from the number of therapists that are out there that are very experienced, but haven't gone through those steps. They might be very well versed and great clinicians, and there was just no way for me to identify them to be able to send that survey out to them directly. So that's why I picked the credentialed therapists.
From a methodological perspective, I think it sounds like a wise step that you took in terms of not just how to identify these individuals, but the fact that you included three different groups is, I think, spectacular. Because as we all probably know, these three groups are going to have very different opinions. And I guess that's interesting. That's the type of thing that we should attempt to understand. And speaking of those opinions, how did this, I guess, overall group of physical therapists, but then also the subgroups, how did they perceive the effectiveness of manual therapy treatment techniques for pre-adolescent children?
Sure. So what I really looked at after round three, I looked at consensus. I looked at consensus within groups, what I ended up doing is grouping the PCS and the NDT group together, because they together made up and were very similar in size to the manual therapy or FAA OMPT group. Between those two groups, I was looking at what areas for each impairment, which technique did they feel was effective? And that meant 75% or more of them agreed that it was effective. I looked at the same thing for the FAOMPT group. Now, what my study really wanted to look at is where did both groups intersect and where did both groups agree? We did have a number of areas where they did agree. I'm going to back up though and tell you that from round one, we identified 8 impairments that the group of therapists kind of identified. And those were the themes that I was talking about earlier. The 8 impairments that we found were decreased neuromuscular control, decreased proprioceptive awareness, hypotonicity, joint pain, joint stiffness, myofascial pain, muscle and myofascial stiffness, as well as spasticity. So in round 2 and 3, what we did is we had our list of, I think there ended up being 12 manual therapy techniques that, again, the group of therapists kind of came up with. And in round 2 and 3, for each impairment, we asked them to grade and vote using the Likert score how they would utilize each technique. You know, was it very not effective or was it very effective, you know, within that range of the Likert score? Jumping back to round 3, looking at the data, where the two groups intersect and agreed and both had consensus individually, grades 1 and 2, mobilization and traction, they felt were effective to treat joint pain and muscle and myofascial pain. Grades 3 and 4, mobilization and traction, they felt were effective in treating joint hypomobility and muscle and myofascial stiffness, which kind of goes along with what we know can be effective when using those techniques. Neurodynamic mobilization, the respondents felt all the impairments were effectively treated using this technique, except for joint pain and spasticity, which I thought was interesting. Neuromuscular techniques, again, the same. They felt that it was pretty much helpful for all impairments except for joint pain and spasticity. And range of motion, best for joint pain and stiffness, muscle myofascial pain and stiffness, and soft tissue mobilization, again, for joint pain and muscle and myofascial pain and stiffness. So what I was really intrigued about and what I really wanted to look at was the differences or where they agreed so that we could start to look at, okay, regardless of our expertise or our knowledge base going into treating this patient, what can we basically agree on is effective for these specific impairments? Now in round 2, what we started to kind of see as we were analyzing some of the data is that there was definitely a difference in opinion when it came to manipulations and using dry needling as well. So we decided on the 3rd round to add another question for each of those. And basically the question was, would you use dry needling in pediatrics? And their available answers to choose from were, I'm not sure, absolutely not, or sometimes, depending on clinical judgment. Ask the same question for manipulations. And what we found was a very big difference between our manual therapy group, our FAA OMPTs, and our pediatric PCS NDT group. For grade 5 manipulations, what the manual therapists would say, sure, sometimes, 87% of the time, they answered sometimes. Whereas our pediatric group, 76% of the time said, absolutely not, wouldn't do it with pediatrics or with this population. When it came to dry needling, it was a little different. 80% of the time, the manual therapist said, sure, based on clinical judgment, I would do it. And our pediatric group, they were a little higher. Sometimes they would do it, 35% of the time, but 41% of them actually said, I don't know. Because again, that's one of the other things that I don't know that there's a lot of literature out there for our pre-adolescent population in the utilization of dry needling.
I'm certainly not surprised that there were those differences between the groups, and I don't know how much of this data you collected, but one can imagine that, let's say, for example, a pediatric physiotherapist that has experience in the neurological realm is asked, would you use a manipulation technique? Would you use dry needling? They could think, A, no, of course I wouldn't do it because I'm not trained in that. They could answer with the thought B, no, I don't think anybody should do that because I don't think it's appropriate for this population. And they could also maybe have a combination of those. Like, let's say they work in a clinic where they are the person with the neurological expertise and they have a coworker, maybe an FAA, OMPT, who will also treat the same patient when an orthopedic concern arises. So they might be thinking, C, I wouldn't do it, but I think it's appropriate because I've seen it done. So now I'm going to select this answer. Did you attempt at all to try and differentiate those things, or can we just not tell that information from this particular study?
We attempted. We looked for barriers and factors that would cause therapists to utilize or not utilize techniques. Not specifically to the grade 5 in dry needling, so we didn't look at it specific to that. But in general, we asked the question, you know, what are some factors that affect your decision making when it comes to using manual therapy? And what are some of the barriers that you perceive? And a lot of those factors were being afraid of litigation, fear of harming the patient, not having the knowledge, whether it's evidence based or not having the skills. So that was one of them. And some of the barriers were the patient's tolerance to handling. Joint-specific treatment, a lot of times if you want to get very specific, you can have general mobilizations or you can have very specific mobilizations. And if you've got somebody that's not comfortable or can't sit still or is irritable, sometimes it's harder to do those techniques. So, you know, patient's tolerance to handling, and we saw some of the same themes again of knowledge. Is the therapist knowledgeable in the technique and just not having the evidence there as well?
Having conducted this study, and then in addition to that, I guess based on all of your knowledge and expertise previously, what's your best advice for physical therapists that are comfortable with manual therapy on older individuals? And let's define that as adolescents and older, because the study was about pre-adolescents. But then they're nervous or lacking confidence when using manual therapy techniques on these younger patients.
Well, first and foremost, in this population, you have to have patience. You have to know that you're going to have to go slow. You're really going to have to explain everything. Sometimes, I think you alluded to earlier in the podcast, playing, getting the kiddo playing, talking about what they like to do. If they like TikTok, maybe have them show you one of their TikTok dances. Maybe he or she can try to teach you, you know, to try to create that bond within your session or over sessions. Like I was saying, incorporating play into the session. Now, you had mentioned with your kiddo that you put them on a ramp. I might have done that too. I might have also had something that we were playing so that you had to squat down, then pick it up and put it in the bucket so that we're getting those repetitions in. And I would tell the manual therapist, start general and then see if you can get specific. See how they tolerate the handling first. So, you know, do your very basic Taylor Crewer mob or maybe try to do it actively and then see if you can get more passively. I think once the kids get used to you, in my experience, a lot of times once they get, and it might take a session or two, so that's where the patience comes in. Once they get used to you, they're more likely going to allow you to do more and help them more specifically in a joint specific range.
I very recently had one of those situations where it was kind of hard to break through with the individual. In this instance, I'm talking about a 5-year-old. And I tried the chatting, I tried the playing, and she was just so shy that I couldn't get through to her. And this is all on visit one. And then I noticed she had these wonderful greenish yellow socks that looked like they had a little face on the side. And I just asked her, do you have a face on your socks? And she was lying down face up. She sprung up. She got this huge smile on her face, and she almost screamed out loud, they're avocados. Apparently, this young girl loves avocados. I happen to also love avocados. And I also happen to have a pretty darn cool avocado tree, of which I have pictures on my cell phone. And then we were able to start to bond on avocados. The end result of our avocado journey was me learning that she, in secret, plunged an avocado pit into one of her mother's houseplants in the dirt. And one day they had this surprise avocado tree growing out of a pot. So they had to go through the whole process of getting another pot and growing it. And it just turned into the theme of our physio. And I suppose the whole point of the story is to say, once we get that connection, once we find it, and it might take some time, it's so much easier to work with this population.
And I would counter with, you have to find that connection with every patient we work with, whether they're an adult, whether they're a child. But yes, in this population, because they're younger and they have a smaller view of the world, I think that it can be more challenging to find that connection.
Yes, and that's, of course, an excellent point. And it really just carries through on some of the earlier themes that we said, which is a lot of times this population isn't that different. It just has maybe a different flair or maybe some different sub-themes within the ways that the patients are already similar to our adult patients.
Yeah, and I would even go so much to say our neuro patients aren't very different from our ortho patients, in the sense of every orthopedic patient that I've worked with and that I've learned about has neuro issues, whether it's proprioception, balance, neuromuscular control. All of our ortho patients have neuro issues. And oftentimes our neuro patients have orthopedic issues, joint stiffness, joint tightness, muscle myofascial tightness. So I think, again, we kind of cross paths between impairments as well.
I couldn't agree more. And that's perhaps why some people are moving towards the word neuromusculoskeletal. But then, of course, if we blur the lines too much, it also creates some confusion. So I don't know how to best handle that, but I think it's a very excellent point, and I think the overlap is obvious. Moving forward, what types of studies do you think we should conduct within physical therapy, in particular as it relates to manual therapy and the treatment of pre-adolescent children?
I would love somehow to do like a cadaveric study to see how much force is actually needed to disrupt a growth plate. I think that would be something that's very beneficial, just to have that base information. Then from there, how much force, I believe there are studies out there. I would have to honestly do a lit search, but I believe there are studies out there to show how much force is needed to do the different grades of mobilization. So then we could kind of take that cadaveric study of the growth plate and compare with what might be known about how much force is needed to complete those mobilizations. Compare the two and see, where does the force of mobilizations line up with the force of disrupting the growth plate? Then from there, could we look at what happens to the growth plates during joint mobilizations using diagnostic ultrasound? Is there movement happening? What's going on? I also think there are some educational opportunities available, whether maybe our manual therapists get a little dose of, you know, developmental review. Maybe that might be helpful to help our adult manual therapists feel more comfortable with some of these patients. And also reviewing manual therapy techniques and how they could be effective for these different impairments in our pediatric therapists.
Dr. Dice, those are all great ideas. And if you conduct those studies in the future, we'd love to have you back on the podcast. Thank you so much for all the work you do. I think you've helped the profession take an important step forward. And I hope that we can continue to move in a positive direction when it comes to understanding manual therapy and how it interacts with pre-adolescent children.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk about the research that I've conducted.
This has been a production of the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. You can learn more about the Academy by visiting our website at aaompt.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching for our acronym, AAOMPT.
The views and opinions expressed on the AOMPT podcast are those of the interviewers and interviewees and do not represent the official position of AOMPT. The information presented should not be used as personal health care or clinical practice advice. If you need to find an expert orthopedic physical therapist near you, then check out the Find a Fellow feature under the Public Resources tab at www.aaompt.org, which you can find in the show notes.